This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary podcast from the BBC World Service with me, Anna Holligan.
This story begins at a crime scene on a main road here in Paris. At 5:30 p.m., around this time, on the 15th of October, 2024, a 27-year-old man was killed here on this street, at this exact spot. His name was Paul Varry, and his death made headlines because of who he was and how he died. Paul Varry was a cyclist, and he was killed in a bike lane, run over by a car after an argument with a driver.
Paul was leaving work one evening. He was going down the bike lane here. There's a traffic light at the end of the street. It's very busy. The cars back up a lot.
Corentin Rideau has cycled back to the scene for the first time since Paul's death. It's a busy junction. There is a bike lane. It's separated with a raised edge. But there's also a small street on our right, often used by cars as a shortcut to avoid getting stuck at the traffic lights.
When traffic is backed up at the light, you sometimes see cars driving on the bike lane to bypass the traffic and take the shortcut to the right. So Paul was on the bike lane, a car took that shortcut on the bike lane, ran over his foot, and Paul, of course, got angry. He slapped the front of the car, and then the car backed up and ran over him and killed him.
The driver ran over Paul's foot. He banged on the bonnet. The driver backed up, reversed, and then ran over Paul.
Yeah, this was not an accident.
Ça a été un choc inimaginable.
It was an unimaginable shock. My whole body was shaking.
Paul's mum, Nathalie Tisson, was told the next morning. Police said he'd been run over and crushed by a 2-ton SUV. The driver said it was an accident, but he's been charged with murder and is awaiting trial.
C'est monstrueux, tellement c'est énorme.
It's monstrous. It's so unbelievable, overwhelming. I tried to check the news, but I just couldn't do anything at all. I just sat there trembling. We were all stunned. We just couldn't believe it, the violence of it. We didn't want to believe it.
Au début, on veut pas y croire.
Violence was not part of his life. His friends told us Paul was the last person to get into an argument. He'd grown up in the countryside. He loved nature, his mum said, and first learned to ride in the mountains.
C'était quelqu'un de très joyeux, très pétillant, qui avait beaucoup d'humour.
He was a very happy and bubbly person. He had a lovely sense of humour and was always very gentle with the people around him. I never saw him in conflict with the people he loved. He was very intelligent, very sensitive. He was beautiful and so kind. He was so full of light.
C'était une lumière, en fait, vraiment.
She says it was when Paul moved to Paris, he really got into cycling, even using his bike to move his furniture to his new apartment. But she was worried for him too.
À Paris, j'ai trouvé qu'il y avait une agressivité.
Indeed, in Paris, I found that there was an aggressiveness between bikes and cars. Drivers can be super aggressive. They just open their windows and insult you. It's also like some feel they're all-powerful. And for some drivers, the car is the extension of their virility, and if anyone touches their car or hits the car, it's taken as a personal attack. I was afraid. I was afraid for him.
Effectivement, j'avais peur. J'avais peur.
The tragic irony was that Paul was an active member of the cycling group Paris en Selle, Paris in the Saddle, which campaigns to have more bike lanes, safer junctions, more separation between bicycles and cars on the streets of Paris. Corentin is the group's spokesman and worked with Paul.
We all thought it could have been us. We have received thousands of testimonies from cyclists on how they have been victims of violence on the road in the past. Of course, you don't have drivers killing cyclists on purpose every day, but it's a scale, and it starts even from insults, but insults, accidents, and then murder is just the next step in the end.
What happened to Paul was extreme, but it resonated too because there's been a new kind of battle playing out daily on the streets of Paris. For the city has been undergoing a radical redesign to get Parisians cycling. It's put in a vast network of bike lanes, introduced new restrictions for cars. The number of cyclists has soared. But there have also been conflicts as drivers, cyclists and pedestrians try to navigate the new balance of power. For assignment, I've come to Paris to find out if Paris's plan is working. Is this transformation the future for other major cities? This all might sound quite familiar to you, but I live in the Netherlands. Over the past 50 years, it's become a cycling paradise where there are segregated bike lanes and everything is organised and orderly. Paris is different. I went cycling with Corentin.
Like, there's motorcycles coming from everywhere, there's bikes going in all directions, the lights, it's almost like the lights may as well not be there because it doesn't matter what colour they are. It's a complete free-for-all. And this guy's going the wrong way on his bike. Like, how is this? How? Why is this happening like this? It's nice I've got squeaky brakes. So we're cycling down a wide boulevard on a bike lane that's wide enough for us to travel two by two. You have a separation created by the parked cars. So this is the dream.
Yes, it's really one of the examples that we want to showcase because it's what we want to do all over the city.
Over the last decade, there's been unprecedented investment in cycling infrastructure. The latest stage is Plan Velo Act 2, totaling €250 million, which aims to make it possible to ride safely anywhere in Paris by 2026.
A few years ago, there was absolutely nothing here. Like, it feels completely different now. It's not perfect, but it's a lot safer than it was before.
Paris has more than 1,000 kilometres of bike lanes, but they come in all shapes and sizes. It can be confusing. Some are wide, separated from traffic. Some are narrow. Some just painted markings on roads. If cyclists do want to follow the rules, and from what we've seen, not all seem to, it's not always obvious what they are. And that can lead to hostility.
So here we can keep going because it's green.
Yes.
It's a green bike, but this car is about to turn as well.
Yeah.
It's super confusing. I'm just going to go ahead of you to let the delivery driver. If you don't know the roads, you have to work it out as you go along, and that's confusing.
Here we just passed three intersections, three traffic signals. This one we have the same one as the cars. The previous one, we had a special signal for bikes. And then the one before that, there was no signal at all. We had to follow the pedestrian light. But very few people know that law, actually. So each intersection is different.
If I wasn't with you, I would have absolutely no clue how to ride here.
We try to ask the city to harmonize everything. But it costs a lot of money.
Junctions are the riskiest spots where confrontations often erupt. A week after Paul Varie's death, the cycling group Paris en Selle compiled a list of 200 dangerous intersections, which they say the city needs to fix now.
Yeah, you can come now.
Okay. Okay.
I mean,
and now we've got pedestrians walking out across a red light.
I mean, that's Parisians in a nutshell.
Yeah, because I can't believe what I'm looking at here. It's just giving me heart palpitations. If you look over here, you've got cyclists coming down. They're trying to go straight ahead, and at the same time, there are cars trying to cut right across their path.
Yes.
You have no idea where that car is going to go.
Yeah, but, I mean, those cars that turned, they had the right of way because they had the green light. The bikes went through the red.
Oh. It's just chaos.
Well, I mean, nobody follows the rules, like the cars, the pedestrians, the bikes, nobody does. So at times it can be, yeah. In fact, it's the only place where I've been physically assaulted in Paris.
What happened?
I would say almost the same thing that happened to Paul. I got cut off by a car, tapped the side of the car, and the driver got off the car and tried to hit me. Thankfully, there were people to help, so nothing happened. But yeah, it shows the conflicts that can happen.
And that was here?
Yeah, it was here, right there.
Generally, Corentin feels much safer now, and that security is reflected in the cycling rates, which have doubled in a year. Now, more than 11% of trips in Paris are made by bicycle, compared to just 4% by car.
Well, there's a lot of things to enjoy, actually. Cycling in Paris is freedom. Like, most streets, you can go anywhere. You can take even small streets, you can take them both ways. It's much more simple than trying to find your way in a car. So we are lucky to be in one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And there's no better way to visit the city than by bike. Like, yeah, you can see the buildings, the architecture, the historical sites. Yeah, there's no better way to get around the city.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Anna Holligan, on assignment in Paris. While encouraging people to ride around these historic streets, Paris is also making it even harder to drive in the city.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
Do you mind if I sit in the front?
Parking spots have been cut by half. If you find a space, parking costs a fortune. They've created a low emission zone. Speed limits have been reduced. Streets have been closed to cars. All the while, everyone else on the road seems to do what they like. So what's it like to be behind the wheel?
So someone just crossed the road without looking.
And you know you're blocking a bike lane right now.
Yeah. It's okay, I'm watching. There is nobody. Okay, there is right.
Reverse.
Shami is a demure and mindful 24-year-old midwife, but is aware the streets of Paris can be a hostile environment.
Yeah, driving in Paris is like going to the war.
Going to war?
Yeah, like you have to be the main character, you know. Like, there is no rules. Stressful. There is a lot of people and scooters and bikes. And sometimes people just drive crazy. Like, in every choice I make, I'm going to block someone else.
Have you ever had any run-ins with cyclists? Not collisions, but arguments?
Yeah. Yeah, they like to tap on the... to hit the car.
Why do they hit the car?
Because you block their way. You try to move, you're blocked. People behind you are mad, so you panic.
What do you do when there's a cyclist who's annoyed at you because you're in a bike lane and they hit the bonnet? What do you do?
I say sorry. I say sorry and I try to move, but sometimes not possible. But I never had an accident or something like that in 3 years.
But you can see where we're sitting, waiting at these lights. There are cyclists in every direction, going all the directions.
It's okay.
I don't know if I can do this.
Oh.
I'm too scared.
It's the first time.
So everyone is ignoring the rules.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. Just car drivers. We obviously stop when there is a red light. But bikes and sometimes motorcycles and electric scooters, they ignore it.
Listening to Shami, you're probably thinking the same as me. Why would you drive?
I don't know. Maybe I'm masochist. I like it. And I have all my friends here. So Paris, I live in a
suburb. In the west.
Yeah, where I live, I don't have any train stations. You know, in Paris, the subway stops at 2 a.m. So I have to take my car.
The bikes just go.
Yeah, they go.
Careful on that side. Okay, no, he's changed sides. He's in there, it's fine.
I'm going to...
Yeah, turn over.
Shami drops me off to avoid dealing with the latest restriction facing cars in Paris, a zone in the centre of the city where all through traffic has been banned. But there has been resistance.
It's a mess. It's a big mess.
Patrick Aboukrat owns a boutique clothes shop in Le Marais, one of the trendiest districts of Paris. He says shops in the area have been affected by the road closures and traffic curtailments.
It's very hard to live, to delivery, to move. And I have a lot of friends live outside of Paris or even on the west of Paris. They say we don't come anymore in the center of Paris. So we lose a lot of customers. If they continue with this kind of politic, we say we are going to sell. When the young people want to open a shop, I say, open a shop on the suburb, go outside of Paris.
Patrick also heads Comité Marais Paris, an association of local business owners. He says the city's government isn't listening to their concerns, so they've launched a lawsuit over the latest traffic-limiting measures.
We understand we need to make a protection for bicycle, but not only for bicycle. We understand we need to use a less car, don't come in the center of Paris. That's why I say to the mayor, we want to work together. Please, can we work with you to changer le plan?
They're not listening.
No. It's ideological.
Ideological.
Not political. Ideological.
The thing is, polls suggest the majority of those who live within Paris don't mind the restrictions. Perhaps because only 30% own a car, the vast majority rely on the city's rather good public transport network. It can still be tricky, particularly for the elderly or those with mobility issues who can't manage stairs or escalators, and families carting around babies and buggies. Those in the outskirts who do tend to drive more are not eligible to vote for the Paris mayor nor influence its traffic policies. And some think that's unfair. Just along the road, we meet Alexandra Legendre.
If I use a car in Paris, it's just not because I want to pollute the roads of Paris. It's just because I need it, because I have no other alternative. Because I have to go back at 3 a.m. in the morning and there's no public transportation at that time, so I need my car. Or I have three children and I need to drive them to the doctor, so I need my car. And you never drive in Paris by pleasure because you like it, because it's hell here.
Alexandra works for a motorist lobby group, the League for the Defence of Drivers. She feels as though the authorities have tilted too far and too fast in favour of cyclists at the expense of everyone else, and not just drivers.
I have bicycle riders who do absolutely anything not to stop, including being on pavements. Now, as a pedestrian, you're not safe anymore because you have scooters, you have bicycles, and they don't give a damn about road safety. And the policies that are adopted now just lead people to fight against each other. And that's a big point, a big issue. If you want mobility to be more agreeable in Paris, then the car drivers cannot be the only ones, the bad guys. It's not possible. Everybody has to take one's responsibility. And this aggressivity that you feel in the streets of Paris did not exist before that, really. But it was, at least for the weaker persons, mainly the pedestrians, it was safe. It's not anymore.
We're walking on the edge of a bike lane, cyclists buzzing in both directions, heading towards the city hall, grand Renaissance-style palace, to meet one of the people widely tipped to be a future leader of this city.
C'était une des villes les moins cyclables d'Europe.
It was one of the least cyclable cities in Europe, and it's become, along with Copenhagen and Amsterdam, perhaps the city which has the highest number of trips by bike. It's a real revolution.
C'est une vraie révolution.
Rémi Féraud is a socialist politician and member of the French Senate. From his office window at Paris Town Hall, he looks down on one of the city's main roads, which has been turned into a bike highway with a degree of pride. He believes in time people will adapt to the huge rise in cyclists. He says violence in the streets is a wider societal problem, but they are taking steps to reduce confrontations.
Vraiment, la coexistence dans l'espace public, dans la rue.
Really, cohesion and coexistence in public space, on the street, between cyclists and motorists, requires separating the spaces reserved for them. Whenever a separate bike path has been created, the conflict between motorists and cyclists on that street has disappeared.
Et pour ce qui est de Paul Varry et de la mort de Paul Varry...
In the Paul Varry case, the investigation is ongoing, but from what's being reported or alleged, the driver deliberately drove into the bike lane and used his vehicle as a weapon. That is something different.
Différence entre les deux. Et ensuite, les conflits au carrefour.
As for the conflicts at crossroads, they're always linked to non-compliance with the rules, either by cyclists or by motorists or even by pedestrians. We are in France. And following the rules is sometimes a bit difficult for people. But it is changing. Respect for the rules on the roads is improving, and it has to improve. And going forward, we will make pedestrians the focus in terms of how we organise the Parisian
streets.
What's your vision, what's your dream for the future of Paris, a car-free capital?
La vision, non, ça n'est pas d'éradiquer la voiture.
The vision, no, it's not to eradicate the car, because there are Parisians who have cars. But by reducing the space for them, we reserve it for those who really need to use their cars. We want a city that is 100% cyclable. That means that bikes can pass safely and comfortably on every street. So there is still a lot of work to be done. But I think that in a few years, we will get there. And it is an offer of freedom.
He admits that not everyone is enthused by their plan. He rejects the argument that those in the suburbs will be hard hit, saying the vast majority already take public transport into the city. He acknowledges that small businesses face problems, but the real threat, he says, comes from the rise in online shopping and home deliveries, not from car restrictions. And for Parisians, there are fundamental issues at stake.
Pourquoi on le fait?
Why do we do it? For questions of public health, air pollution, to fight climate change. Because if we want to step back from using the car, we must provide alternatives, and because the bicycle is complementary to public transport. And that leads to another kind of city, a city with less noise, less pollution, more well-being. And the objective is not only Paris, as I hope many other cities in the world will join in the fight against climate change and improve the health of their inhabitants by reducing air pollution.
La santé de ses habitants en diminuant la pollution de l'air.
Certainly, across the EU, pollution and emissions targets are major catalysts for the move to restrict car use in cities and promote bikes.
Thrashed out in Brussels, the EU's Green Deal aims to achieve a 90% reduction in transport-related greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Petrol and diesel vehicles are particular targets. But that's worried some in the car industry. And the recent victories of more climate-sceptic, centre-right and far-right parties in European elections has led to some pushback.
I mean, I think there's a lot of emotions involved right now in, you know, cars and the fact that they might be polluting. And of course, there is this climate alarmism and we all feel the need to contribute and to search for improvement. But by dramatizing that, then we become under pressure. And under pressure, we don't take the best decisions. So I think we need to get away from this tunnel vision that we have on this and have a balanced consideration of the interests of all the stakeholders in that matter, so we have a gradual transition.
Jessica van Leeuwen is a Dutch member of the European Parliament for the right-wing populist Farmer Citizen Party.
If we're really banning out one means of transportation, we're also making it very difficult for people to make a living, because while for some people this goes very well and they're able to reach their work on a bicycle or use public transportation, there's also a lot of people that actually depend on their cars in order to either reach their work or to do their job. And if we say, well, you cannot drive a car or you can only drive an electric vehicle, then who is going to pay that price eventually? I mean, it's the small and medium-sized enterprises that are having a very hard time to comply with all these regulations that we put on top of them.
Right-wing parties did well at the EU elections. They're more sceptical of the restrictions on cars. Do you think there is a shift away from Copenhagen and Paris-style solutions, the way in which those cities are moving towards prioritising bikes?
People have voted differently in this last election. So yes, I believe that we are on the start of some more climate realism, for that matter, instead of climate alarmism, where we, you know, understand that people need their cars, and that we just need to support the industry to innovate enough so we can reach our goals in terms of emissions.
Can there be a happy balance between cars and bikes?
Of course there can. I mean, we've been doing this for a long time in the Netherlands. But you have to make sure that everybody has a very well-designed place to be on the road. So you have your bicycle lanes and you have the lanes where cars can only drive. And in that way, you can find safe space for everybody. But also, if you look at Europe and European cities, every city has a unique infrastructure. I think it's not easy to just make one model, one size fits all. If you sometimes go to larger cities, but the city is not specifically equipped to welcome those cyclists. So there, of course, it becomes very dangerous.
In the Netherlands, my home, it took decades to achieve the transition, to install the infrastructure, to separate road users, to create the mutual understanding which can lead to fewer conflicts and end a battle for the roads. Cities are different. Cultures are different. Parisians are famously rebellious. But Paris is also just at the start of a process. And back on the streets for Corentin and Povary's mum, Nathalie, there's hope his life and his death will be a reminder that this needs to be a peaceful revolution.
There is a future where we can make the city better to live in, with less cars, just enough for the city to function, and where bikes can go everywhere and be safe. We did make a lot of progress in the past 10 years. There are so many bikes in Paris that I do think there's no way back.
Pour nous, en fait, Paul, ça a été, son décès a été comme un sacrifice.
Paul's death was like a sacrifice. He was so bright, intelligent, sensitive. We've been reduced to 1,000 pieces. And we have to ask ourselves, what kind of society do we want to live in?
This edition of the documentary podcast was presented by me, Anna Holligan. The producer was Alex Last. We got help in Paris from Leontine Galwa. The sound mix was by Neil Churchill. The production coordinator was Gemma Ashman. And the series editor is Penny Murphy.
I'm Natalia Melman-Petrozella.
And from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2, and of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.